Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. It is so good to see everyone this morning. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is my delight to serve this joyful congregation. You are welcome here, no matter who you are, where you've come from. If this is your first time or you're coming back into the sanctuary after having attended here many, many years, you're welcome. Whether you are joyful or not, whether you're in the sanctuary, whether you're watching this online, whether you're watching a recorded service, you are welcome here. You're welcome whether you love gift-giving this time of year or you simply dislike it or you just don't do it anymore. You are welcome if you feel joyful or hopeful this season. And you are welcome if you feel depressed, anxious and lonely, and can't really bear this whole thing. Everyone is welcome here. You are a beloved child of the universe. So for people who are here in the sanctuary and downstairs, I really ask you to put your phones on airplane mode. That helps with the live streaming experience at home. So for singing, if you are at home, I really encourage you to stand up and belt out all the songs, because it's just so fun. If you're here, I ask you to stand up and you can hum your masks. We're just not going to spew those aerosols into the air quite yet. So I want you all to put on your calendars that our Christmas Eve service this year is December 24th at 5 p.m. And you will get registration things to sign up to come here that day. And we also are asking everybody to send a picture of yourself with a candle. And we have holiday bags that actually have candles in them. They are in the cabinet between the minister's office and fireside. And they have lots of supplies for the holiday services at home. And I'd also like to remind people to sign up for the January 8th workshop that we're holding. It's on creating multicultural community and the eighth principle, and it's by the person who's giving the workshop is the person who wrote the eighth principle. So it's a really great opportunity for us, and I encourage you to sign up. If you're online this morning, please join our online coffee hour. The link is in your order of service. If you were here, we ask that you move outside and keep distance while you're doing coffee hour with each other. So now it's time for our chalice lighting. It's from Gordon B. McKinnon. Deep calls unto deep. Joy calls unto joy. Light calls unto light. The kindling of this flame rekindles in us the inner light of love, of peace, of hope. And as one flame lights another, we pledge ourselves to be bearers of the light wherever we are. Let us say our affirmation together. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
La da 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 da
cheer to young and old, meek in the bold, ding dong, ding dong, that is the song with joyful ring, all caroling, one seems to hear words of good cheer from everywhere, filling the air, oh how they sound, raising their sound, o'er hill and dale, telling their tale.
La la la.
sweet silver bells all seem to say, throw cares away.
We will throw cares away.
Christmas is here, bringing good cheer to young and old, meek and bold.
Bringing cheer.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Scott Winters, and my pronouns are he and him. And I am your lay leader this morning. Our opening reading is by the Reverend Scott Taylor. It's Flung. Joy doesn't simply arrive. It flies. It flings. No, it's flung. It is passed, it is spread between you and me, between the one who just received a gift and the one that has been looking for it a long time. It is a beautiful and elegant contagion over which we have more control than we think. If only we share it, if only we notice that joy is not ours to keep, but ours to pass on. So let's light up the world, friends. Joy blesses us with its exuberance so we can make that blessing grow.
Today, for our time for all ages, I want to share with you Night Tree, written by Eve Bunting and illustrated by Ted Rand. I chose this story for today because it is a story of a family that goes out of their way to find joy in the simple things, to find joy in each other and the outside world, to make sure they're not taking for granted the beauty all around them. This is Night Tree. On the night before Christmas, we always go to find our tree. We bundle up so we're warm. Nina is already wearing her boots that are too big for her. She has been wearing them all day. Dad sets our box in the back of his truck with the rest of his stuff, and the four of us swish into the front seat. We drive through the bright Christmas streets where the dark and quiet begin. Nina is almost asleep in Mom's lap when we stop. Are we there? I ask, and Dad says yes and rolls down the windows so we can smell the tree smell. We scramble out. There are oaks growing here and alder and maples that are bare now and white in the sunshine. The pines and the spruces and the firs are green. This is called Luke's Forest, but Dad says it's not really a forest. It's just a nice forgotten place where our town ends. Dad goes first on the path between the trees, carrying our box and the big red lantern. Mom and Nina go next, holding hands. I come last with the blanket. No, it hasn't snowed yet. It's so cold my breath hurts. The sky is splattered with stars, and the moon, big as a basketball, slides in and out between the treetops. Dad's lantern sweeps ahead. Look, he whispers. A deer is watching us. I see the brightness of its eyes. Then it turns and is gone. Here's our tree, Dad says. It has been our tree forever and ever. We walk around it, touching it. It's grown since last year, I say. Mom puts her hand on my shoulder. So have you. So have I, Nina says. Nina hates to be left out. An owl hoots deep in the darkness. There are secrets all around us. Can I put on the popcorn chain? Nina asks. She hops up and down and right out of one of her boots. Mom helps her put it back on. Nina takes one end of the chain and I take the other and wind it around our tree. We've brought apples and tangerines with strings on them, and we hang them from the branches. It's hard to hang string loops when you have gloves on, but it's too cold to take them off. For weeks, we've been making balls of sunflower seeds and pressed millet and honey. We hang those, too. We scattered shell nuts and breadcrumbs and pieces of apple underneath for the little creatures who can't climb very well. Our tree looks so pretty. Mom says I should spread out the blanket so we can sit and admire our tree. She has brought a thermos of hot chocolate. I take off my gloves and I toast my hands around my warm cup. Dad turns out the lantern and we stay quiet, hoping some of the little animals will come while we're here, hoping the deer will come back. But it doesn't. It's shy, Dad says. I'm shy too, Nina tells him. Before we leave, she and I get to choose a Christmas carol to sing. I choose, O Come All Ye Faithful. Nina chooses, Old MacDonald Had a Farm. That's not a Christmas song, silly, I tell her, but Mom says it's fine, and a very nice song too. We sing fast because there's lots of verses and it's getting colder. After the last E-I-O, we gather up our things and head out for the truck. I look back once. Our tree has folded itself into the darkness, but I think I can see it still, swinging lopsided on top. Nina gets tired, and Dad has to wrap her in the blanket and carry her. I carry her boots. Later, in bed, I think about our tree, and sometime next day, when the aunts and uncles and cousins are at our house, and it's noisy and happy, I let my mind go back to Luke's forest. I think of the birds having Christmas dinner and the squirrels and the possums and the raccoons and the skunks. There might even be a bear because Dad says bears don't really sleep all winter, and if one's going to wake up, I just bet it would wake up for Christmas. Maybe a fox has come, stepping high on its thin, sharp paws, and they're all there together singing their own Christmas songs on Christmas Day. Around our tree. My hope for you this holiday season is that you find your night tree, a place that you can go when things get hectic, to feel some peace and joy.
Now is time in our service for reflection, meditation, or prayer, as is your tradition. Dear Spirit of love and life, hold fiercely in our hearts all those who have died, their families and loved ones, those who have lost homes and places of employment, and churches in cyclones of wind across the southern United States. Hold those communities where COVID is once again surging, filling hospitals, reducing care for all. Hold those who are ill and grieving and those who have died. Hold those who truly believe that a vaccine will kill them more surely than COVID-19. Let us hold all those who live in, all of us, who live in the uncertainty of surges and variants, and try to find some way to a life that is safe and nourishing in these times. And let us always remember to be grateful for the bright lights of our community, for cookies and those who bake them, for gifts we are excited to give, for family and friends we are excited to see, for music and for love. Let us remember every day to be grateful for the earth and the sun. They give us life, making all the beauty and wonder around us possible. Now it is time to sit in some silence.
A reading by Steve Kowit. Notice. This evening, the sturdy Levi's I wore every day for a year, and which seemed to end in perfect condition, suddenly tore. How or why, I didn't know, but there it was, a big rip in the crotch. A month ago, my friend Nick walked off a racquetball court, showered, got into his street clothes, and halfway home, collapsed and died. Take heed, all you who read this, and drop to your knees again and again, like the poet Christopher Smart, and kiss the earth, and be joyful, and make much of your time, and be kindly to everyone, even those who do not deserve it. For although you may not believe it will happen, you too will one day be gone. I, whose Levi's ripped at the crotch for no reason, assure you that this is the case. Pass it on.
So I was taught from a very young age that Christmas was about giving. I was also taught that the most precious gifts were homemade. So while my parents bought a few gifts for me and my brother, in my family, we gave homemade gifts. I made gifts for all my grandparents and aunts, as well as my closest family. One year, I made macrame plant holders for everyone. It was the 1970s, after all. Another year, since I was very into Laura Ingalls Wilder, I sewed aprons and sunbonnets for all the women. Another year, I made cutting boards, alternating oak and black walnut. I still have one to this day. And I used to get a stomachache before Christmas because I was so anxious that people would like my gifts. And it was always literally a shock that I received gifts myself. I nearly always forgot about that part of Christmas. There was much goodness about these traditions in my life. I still believe that Christmas is all about giving and have really never caught up on receiving. My parents were very involved in making my Christmas gifts as a child, so it was a way that we got to spend time together as a family. And my mother and I continued a craft tradition where we made soap and candles for people for years. I love giving gifts that are well-suited and perfect for the receiver. My family's tradition was also incredibly stressful. I have worried so much over the years about giving really well that sometimes it has caused intense distress. The time commitment was also extraordinary. Do you know how many hours an 11-year-old has to sand to make 5 cutting boards? As an adult, I didn't have time like that, and I had to rein in my gift giving, which made me sad and feel at first, in my 20s, fairly inadequate. I learned over the years, finally, how to buy gifts and not only make them, which did help some. And I chose to pass on a much milder gift-giving tradition to my own children, who gave things like cookies and handmade ornaments. Our theme this month is joy. The Archbishop Desmond Tutu says in the Book of Joy, which is a conversation between himself and His Holiness the Dalai Lama, "I mean simply to say that our ultimate joy is when we seek to do good for others. I mean simply to say," he says, "that ultimately our greatest joy is when we seek to do good for others. In the book, this is the spiritual teacher's primary position, that turning towards others and doing good for them is the ultimate and best way to experience joy. Last week, we talked about how joy can bubble up in the darkest times. And this week, we ponder the ways that turning towards others can bring us happiness in both good times and painful times. Doing good for someone else can make us joyful. This is certainly something nearly all of us have experienced, and many of us do quite a lot of, offering care, giving a gift that brings pleasure, volunteering to help those and help ourselves. It is such a lovely message in these dark days, when the sun sets early and rises late, when many days are just dull and dark and gray, as the pandemic rages on, when many of us are so exhausted by its persistence and afraid for our country and the world on so many fronts. This part, though, that when our mood is low, when we are despairing, when life makes no sense, when we are afraid that the next right thing can be to do something good for someone else, that is a radical claim. And it's one with all sorts of possible rebuttals. When the Dalai Lama and the Archbishop shared their central idea with the journalist Douglas Carlton, he was moved, but he was also skeptical. Most people, he thought, do not walk around thinking about how they can help others. Whether we like it or not, most people are waking up in the morning wondering how they are going to manage to do their jobs, make enough money to pay the bills, and take care of their families and other responsibilities. So there is definitely that. There is also those who spend all their time doing good for others. Think of those who are actively parenting while working as doctors or nurses or teachers or other helping professions until they are exhausted, so far from anything like joy. What about the other messages so many of us receive in this culture that is actually focused on ourselves that brings joy and happiness, uncovering our own passions, doing activities that satisfy our very beings, eating the particular diet that nourishes our bodies, no matter how complicated that is, or spending time offering care to our own deepest pain. These are the lessons we learn in our self-help culture. In this mindset, doing good for others is fine for people who like that sort of thing. Then there is the insistent but similar message of capitalism that teaches us that joy and happy come from treating ourselves to whatever interests us, whether this is a new object or a fun experience. For many of us, doing good for others can feel like a burden or a responsibility and something we should do, something that makes us a good person. Or it can be something we do when all else is in order, whenever that should happen. But a sure pathway to joy, something we choose when life is difficult, this isn't something most of us consider. However, the Dalai Lama and the Desmond Tutu are not alone in their recommendations. Ann Landers, the revered advice columnist of the 20th century, used to say repeatedly in her newspaper columns, if you want to feel better, do something for somebody else. Those who give are happier, studies have found. If given a surprise gift of money, we are happier, they've discovered, when we give it away than when we keep it. This is actually biological. When we do good deeds, says Stephen Post, author of Why Good Things Happen to Good People, we're rewarded by a dopamine pulse. Giving a donation or volunteering in a food bank tweaks the same source of pleasure that lights up when we eat or have sex. It's clear that helping others, even at low thresholds of several hours of volunteerism a week, creates mood elevation. Research has shown that doing good for others makes us healthier, including lowering our blood pressure and helping us live longer. It improves the health of people with chronic illnesses such as HIV and MS. We are more generous when we are generous, we perceive other people more positively. When we are lonely and isolated, we are more likely to perceive threats and danger around us. So doing good for others helps us feel safer in our communities. Why is this doing something for good for others so positive in our lives? The Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu tell us that turning towards others brings joy because of our deep interconnection as beings. We cannot be human without each other. We are tribal in our biology. We are social creatures at our very core, and we are not meant to be alone. But to be part of an interconnected webs of community, when we connect through doing good for another, that feeling of interconnection activates, coming alive within us and between us. Jesus said, "For where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there with them." This untangible sense, perhaps called Jesus, the Holy Spirit, or community, turns on when people gather for the purpose of being good to one another. For me, this lively sense of interconnection is why I love gift giving. When I simply need to buy someone something as an obligation and have almost no idea what sort of gift might bring that person some satisfaction, it feels really heavy and hard. A transactional, consumeristic exchange. When I get to sleuth about and am able to give something appropriate, I experience tremendous joy. My family's gift giving of homemade gifts was one attempt at giving each person on our list tremendous amounts of attention. As I became a young adult, I didn't recognize at first that I had to do basic care for myself for the first time in my life, such as, you know, getting food and exercise and rest and compassion before I could turn towards anyone else. I simply could not make the extraordinary things I had done as a child, and for a long time I felt badly about that. Providing care to ourselves first is something that many of us, particularly those socialized as women, were not taught. Many of us were taught that paying attention to self was selfish. Shaking this off and learning to offer ourselves tenderness and care is essential for health and flourishing. It is necessary for doing any good to anyone else. We all need shelter, and we need healthy food. We need rest. We need exercise. We need times of silence, reflection, meditation, or creativity. In our individualistic society, however, it is not unusual to merge the need for basic self-care with an intense focus on ourselves, where we believe we should attend significantly to our needs and wants to be joyful and happy. And this attitude spills into times when we are suffering, where the reaction can be to double down on the focus on ourselves. However, according to the Desmond Tutu, the Dalai Lama, and scholars from many fields, this is not the best way to go. It forgets another need, as deep as the need for exercise, meditation, and rest, and that is our essential connections to one another. They bring us alive. They give us joy. We can create and improve our connections to others by doing good things for other people. We can turn toward that connection by our choice. And this releases our focus on self, which can be such a relief when we are suffering. Research has shown that emotional, mental, and physical pain actually decrease when we are giving to others. Our bodies also gives us that delicious hit of dopamine. There are so many ways to do good for others. Gift giving, when it is done freely, is not a burden and not simply a holiday expectation that drives the capitalistic economy, is certainly one way. The easiest, cheapest, least time-consuming way is to simply smile at people, even if that's over our masks and requires a hi or hello as well. As Dolly Parton says, I always just thought if you see somebody without a smile, give them yours. Greeting people kindly and with respect is always good, or simply attending to the person you're with instead of rushing in your mind off to the next thing is always a way to do good. Do you know how often grocery store clerks and receptionists are treated as objects, not as people? Maybe doing good is listening or helping someone in a time of struggle. Maybe it is making dinner or planning a party. Maybe it's being able to join our sorrow with someone else's in a deep act of empathy and care. Or covering a tree with ornaments for animals to eat. It could mean teaching or serving in an organization that supports other people. Doing good for others may mean joining a struggle for justice. The truth is, we are all different, with different ways of doing good for others. I don't know if there's been any research, but I suspect we each get different levels of dopamine for different activities. I personally would be completely stressed by making soup for a sick person, but I get great joy from paying attention to people and listening to them. And fortunately, there are other people who love feeding others. In the blog, Buddhist Guide for Lay People, the author writes about how to make this discovery and how to grow ourselves into doing more good for others when this might not have been our practice or when we just want to increase the practice in our lives. The author says, there is an important result to look for in practicing generosity. How does it make you feel? True generosity carries with it a feeling of joy or relief, the feeling of a heart releasing tension. When you give something, do you feel happy? Whether the gift is tangible or intangible, large or small, the giving of it is generosity only if we give it with an open heart, with the intention of a transaction of kindness with someone else. Check your intention in the moments leading up to the giving, during the act of giving, and afterwards. Is there an intention to increase someone else's happiness? Are you responding to an inner need to give or to let go of something? Even if it's mixed with other motives, if there is a feeling of release, then your generous nature has been nourished. This time of year, giving and doing good can be forced and expected and easily stripped from the feelings of relief and joy. Maybe this year is a good time to consider how the underlying purpose of the season, the practice of doing good, can be revived, particularly if this is a hard season for you or you are suffering in other ways. This is not about buying for people on a list. It is not about obligations. It is not about being a good person or sacrificing oneself. It is about finding ways to bring happiness and joy into our lives and the lives of others, when these days, many people aren't doing all that well. Maybe this is smiling at each other, at others, and saying hi. We're just paying closer attention to the overworked and tired store checker. We're paying drinks forward at the coffee stand. Maybe it is doing the kind things or giving gifts to those closest to us or in our extended community. Or maybe we want to join a team and use our power to make the world a safer, kinder place for all of us. It can be so many things, doing good for others. May joy come to us all. May we be sparkling nodes of light in the web that binds us together. May we send our lights down the strand so other lights can burst into flame and their light can lead to others. May we glow and bask in the light of each other. This is what we were made for. This is how we keep love alive. May it be so.
Thank you. of Orient are, bearing gifts we traverse afar, field and fountain, moor and mountain, following yonder star.
Trevor.